It is March, and this is Inside Ivy Hoops, Ivy Hoops Online's podcast about what else? Ivy League basketball. I'm IHO editor Mike Tony, joined by IHO writer extraordinaire Rob Brown. Rob, how are you, sir?
I am okay. Pretty worn out from last weekend's games, trying to get energy going before tomorrow afternoon's Princeton Brown game, and I'm a bit bleary eyed from looking at all the 512 possible scenarios going on for Ivy Madness.
Yeah, that'll make you bleary-eyed real fast. That's for sure. Well, you know, and it's we're going into the second week of March now, and we're still in the regular season. It's a bit of an odd calendar we've got this year. We were going well into March with Ivy League play. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Make it savor it while it lasts, I suppose, is where we're at this point. And you have, now that we've got the Ivy League tournament nearly upon us, you've got a bit of news from the Ivy League office for us, Rob. What is it?
Yeah, well, I guess, let's see, I guess we'll start with today's most recent news on their website is TIAA is now the new lead sponsor for the tournament. I don't know who did it last year. Maybe Goldenberg's peanut chews for all I can remember. I think it was Citizens Bank the first year. But that's from a corporate standpoint. In terms of the ticket sales, I think they are at about 2,300 for the semifinal round, the men's semifinal, 2,200 for the final. So you're about 82% of capacity for semifinal and about just under 80% for the final. And still, according to the league office, they are they're ahead numerically in terms of the first 2 years. If that's the case, then things are looking good. They said that both of the first 2 years, the biggest surge in ticket sales was after the final game of the regular season. So, you know, I think the first year was about 6,500 for that first semifinal, and maybe 5,400 or 5,500 for the second year. So if they sold over 3,000 tickets or so, you know, in that several-day period, then, you know, a couple hundred shouldn't be a problem. I guess I'll put an asterisk on that, and we'll get into it when we delve into the different scenarios. But, you know, I'm guessing, you know, Princeton, Harvard, Yale have already locked in on the men's side. I'm sure many of those fans have bought tickets. The other group that have probably bought tickets prematurely are the Penn fans, and if they don't make it in, you know, how is that going to affect ticket sales? You know, are they going to be able to sell it on the secondary market? Is there even a desire on those markets for these games? So that'll be an interesting thing to see play out, depending on Saturday and Friday's results.
Yeah, and to be clear, Ivy Hoops Online does not get any kickbacks from TIAA whatsoever. The Ivy League, though, it's interesting. JMI Sports has... managing the marketing rights these past 3 years for the Ivy League. Certainly some big names adding deals with, I know Porsche was last year.
Yeah, Porsche, that's right.
Winter of last year. Then you have, Nike, Coca-Cola. So you've got some others that are feeding into, I suppose, the branding of the Ivy League, and it's big business, I suppose. But returning back to the attendance, where the levels are right now for the tournament in New Haven, obviously one of the more geographically centrally located Ivy venues that there are, how do you think this factors into or portends for going forward, as the Ivy League rotational schedule continues for the next at least 6 years?
Yeah, I kind of bounce around every day. I have another thought about the tournament, you know, especially after last week's news of them having the events all scheduled out, at least terms of the location until 2025. You know, it's going to be interesting. interesting to see how it fully plays out this year in terms of ticket sales. Next year, it's going up to Harvard, and I think they have about 1,600 seats after their recent renovation. So I think between the fact that you're in a metropolitan city, there's going to be a lot of alums in the Boston area. You're going to have that core group of Harvard seniors, going on their last run. I expect them, barring some real strange issues, I expect them to make the tournament. So I think the league is safe for next year, and then the following year it goes to Jadwin. Obviously, that will depend a little bit more on Princeton's participation. If they're in it, I think they'll do just fine. If they're not, and Penn's in it, you'll get people from Philadelphia. But if those two teams are struggling, then it's going to be a rather empty venue. But assuming everything goes well for the league and Princeton and or Penn make it in, that they should have a nice attendance, even if they don't sell out Jadwin. But then the next couple of years, I think, gets more difficult. The Pensacola Center, you're going to Lead, you're going to Newman up at Cornell. If those teams aren't in it, I know Robin Harris feels that it's a pretty convenient and easy trip to get up to those locations, but I don't know how eager people would be to get up to Ithaca or to Hanover in mid March. I think they're in a I don't know. It's a big wait and see over those next couple of years. I kind of think that maybe they should consider expanding the tournament to for a couple reasons going forward. One aspect is right now, I would say, you and I have kind of talked about this, is right now I'd say 15 of the 16 teams have a legitimate shot at winning every night. And you've got two conferences that are in the top 12 nationally. The men's group is leading the nation in closest games. So you could have really exciting games and competitive games, through another round. Certainly would help ticket sales by increasing the number of alumni groups and student groups that could come up. So I think it's something that they really should start to consider over the next couple of years.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see going forward, what are the fluctuations given how the tournament how it goes, who's in it. It'll be interesting just this year, in fact, to see, if Penn makes the tournament, if the Penn men make the tournament. Unfortunately, I would love for the Penn women to be a draw, and they absolutely should be. But I think the Penn men, will be a huge factor for a lot of fans in whether they go. If the Penn men do make it, how many Penn and Princeton fans are there, the old guard, so to speak, versus, Harvard and certainly Yale. I mean, how big of a home crowd is this going to be for Yale, essentially, is what I'm interested to see. And, we'll find out. And I don't know how or whether that will inform how the league structures the tournament going forward, since, they committed to the rotational schedule before seeing how this year would play out. But I don't know. I think that, to me, what's most compelling about expanding it to 8 teams, which I don't support, but the most compelling part of it to me is the ticketing. You don't know until, we're not going to know until the final game is over who's in the tournament for both sides. And that's part of the appeal, of course, of Ivy Madness, who's getting in. It's a first certainly intriguing race to see who gets the number 4 seed and who's left on the outside looking in. But the ticketing reality of that is you got a lot of fans not knowing whether their team's going to be in it. And of course, that's an argument against having the number one seeds host too, because, well, you know, is my team hosting? you know, where's the tournament going to be? Don't even know that until the final weekend. Of course, that's a moot point because that's never going to happen. But in terms of expanding it to eight, yeah, you've got, and you made this point, certainly, you've got a lot of great players that aren't going to be in the tournament just because their teams happen to be in the lower tier that year. But ultimately, it comes down for me to who's representing the league in the NCAA tournament. You want it to be the best team, the one with the best resume that's going to get you a better seed, a better matchup, try to win some games in the tournament, boost the league's profile, look good on the league. I don't think it necessarily does the league any favors beyond the conference tournament to see, a 5 or 6 seed that happens to make a run in a, you know, in a league with parity that wins the conference tournament, and because their regular season resume wasn't that great, you know, gets in. I guess, you know, maybe Penn on the men's side would be an exception to that if they wind up the 5 or 6 with the non-conference resume that they had. But I think it's pretty rare that you see that non-conference Ivy split that Penn has come up with this year. So that would be one of my reservations there. But certainly from an Ivy fan standpoint, you know, making the tournament a celebration of the league, yeah, I mean, I can see, and we said this before we started recording, I can see going to 8 teams, you know, I can see that feasibly happening, much more so than, you know, going to, really, I mean, that actually seems more likely to me at this point, given how the league has approached the tournament, than even going to a neutral site, and certainly more so than letting the number one seeds host or letting higher seeds host. I think including, you know, there's some backing that we've seen throughout the league to including all 8 teams. But
the other part in you were mentioning earlier about like seeding, and I'll throw my idea that I threw out to you last night. You know, whether you have 4 teams or 8 teams, the Southern Professional Hockey League last year went to a unique system where the top seeds get to choose their opponent of the lower seeds in the first round. So, you know, if you adapt that to the Ivy League, you could take whoever, let's say it's Princeton on the women's side, Harvard on the men's side, they could take their choice of the other 3 seeds of who they want to face in the first round. And, you know, right now, like if you look back a couple years ago, Princeton was undefeated and had to play a surging Penn team at the Palestra, and they might have opted to play Yale or Harvard that on that first semifinal. And going into this year, you know, I don't know if Harvard ends up as the number 4 seed on the women's side. I don't think either, you know, I don't think the number 1 seed on the women's group would want to face Harvard in the first round. So that's something that you can kind of play with since you're not at a neutral site and give some kind of advantage to the number 1 seed.
That is definitely a fascinating approach. Obviously, it kind of builds in instant bulletin board material, I guess, or motivating. Oh, you wanted to play us, huh? You thought you could beat us, huh? I mean, that's inherently intriguing for that aspect alone. But and that's probably why you don't see that very much. That would be interesting. That would take it out of the league's hands, I suppose. Just let the teams decide. That's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. But I wanted to move to something a little more serious. Since we last recorded, the news came that Princeton senior guard Devin Kennedy took a leave of absence from the university, will not play for the remainder of, again, his senior season. It was a voluntary leave of absence. A university spokesperson said, deputy university spokesperson Mike Hotchkiss, who I think very notably added in his statement that he, Kennedy, has the university's full support. The news comes after Kennedy was arrested in January following an alleged confrontation with customers and police at a local Wawa. The Daily Princetonian has reported, faces lesser charges of simple assault, resisting arrest, disorderly conduct, being under the influence without a prescription, after he was initially charged with aggravated assault. Encouraging that he posted on Twitter last week that or last weekend that past few weeks have been extremely difficult for me and my family, and as a result, I will be taking a leave of absence from school to be with them. This is Kennedy on Twitter. Ultimately, this decision has been exactly what I've needed, and being home with my family has given me peace and clarity. In the near future, I will finish my last semester and graduate from Princeton. He goes on to say he's going to be signing with an agent and declaring for the NBA draft now that he's no longer has collegiate eligibility, thanks to extended thanks to everyone who's supported him throughout the process. So I guess that's, you know, given what we know, that's all you can do is be happy for the fact that he's gotten some peace and clarity since stepping away. What are your thoughts on Rob, on Devin Kennedy's playing legacy at Princeton, and you know, how he seems to be doing now?
Yeah, in terms of the news, there's the original court case, which had been dropped from the Mercer County Prosecutor's Office down to the Princeton Municipal Court. I guess it was postponed last week and rescheduled for March, for Monday, this past Monday. And I believe it was postponed again. So that part of it is in limbo. And again, we don't know why he took the leave of absence from school. It seemed from the reports that the school did its own investigation and completed it and adjudicated it. So it doesn't seem related to that. So as you said, hopefully he's getting, you know, whatever peace of mind he needs to get right now. And that's, you know, good for him. Tremendous player. You know, George could certainly speak to his legacy a lot better than I can. I'm biased. in some ways, you know, you wish some of those guys like Miles Stevens and Devin Kennedy, you know, good luck on graduation and the next step in your careers. But tremendous shooter, tremendous player, always seemed to be a great competitor, class act, but on the court, you know, even that the game in the Palestra a few weeks ago, seems like an eternity ago, but back in January when they came back to win late, you know, some kids were giving him a hard time during the game, and afterwards he stopped by, shook their hands, met with them. So, you know, just an all-around fantastic player. I don't know if he ended up as he was projected to be the number two scorer in Princeton history going into the season. I don't know with everything that's happened. I'd be surprised if he got there, but he's obviously, you know, a top five scorer and, you know, a key component of that championship team from 2 years ago. So I think he'll have a pretty strong legacy in the big picture. And hopefully, you know, this episode will be more anecdotal than anything going forward.
Yeah, that was my kind of lasting image of him, was his tweet, actually his last tweet before the alleged incident, him, you know, with the kids, as you mentioned, at the Palestra. It was a pretty pretty cool image, pretty cool tweet. And yeah, it's hard to believe that was only just a few weeks back, signing and giving shoes away, posing with some very young fans at the Palestra after Princeton's win there on the 12th of January. Our Richard Kent had a Q&A with Mekhi Mason that we published at the site earlier this year on Ivy Hoops Online. And, he asked him, essentially, who was the most challenging, toughest player you played in the Ivy League? And his answer was Devin Kennedy. And they only overlapped for 1 year. So he was playing Devin Kennedy as a rookie, as a first year, and said that. An extraordinary talent, and from a very narrow, from a very narrow basketball perspective, Princeton. I don't think they've really missed much of a beat with him out of the lineup in Ivy play, but nevertheless, I do think that's a huge loss that will eventually. That impact will be felt, maybe not till the Ivy tournament, but certainly it will be felt. But bottom line is, there are things bigger than basketball, many, many things, and hopefully he gets the piece of clarity that he's searching for, and bounces back. Personal level going forward. With that, wanted to pivot over to what was another good weekend for the Princeton Tigers on the women's side. A sweep for the Tigers, a hard-earned sweep, in fact, to stay atop the Ivy League standings. 5 wins in a 9-day span for Princeton, including that huge win at the Palestra last Tuesday. Yale kind of had a do or die after their Friday night loss at Cornell, getting swept to by Cornell and able to bounce back at Columbia after a bit of a rocky start with a huge third quarter there. Essentially, lay of the land on the women's side. Penn and Princeton are tied for first in the standings, of course. Princeton's trying to get its second straight. Remarkable, in the last 10 years, they're looking to get 7 Ivy League championships. Already got 6. Penn's looking for its third since its first in 2014 under Coach Mike McLaughlin. But Yale's got the inside track to the number 4 seed. Essentially, they control its own destiny there. Win out and you're in, although that's not going to be easy against Penn and Princeton. That's kind of the rub. For Yale at this point, though, they do host. And, we'll get to this later in the show, what we think the seeding will be on each side. But what's your take on the lay of the land on the women's side, Rob?
It's hard not to see, to see how impressive the Princeton streak has been lately. Like you said, 5 wins in 9 games. And then, they played Princeton, they played Penn and Harvard. So they seem to be locking into the right mentality. Their defense is getting stronger. Allery is always going to be a double-double, every night. And her scoring went down a little bit, but you can start to see Carly Littlefield and Gabrielle Rush and Sydney Jordan, starting to really take hold there, which is good for them. So they're getting a bit more balance than they did in the middle of the season, maybe the beginning of the Ivy League stretch. So I think they're in a really good place. place right now. And I wonder if like having a week off and rest will actually hurt them in a weird way. But I think they're where they want to be. I think Penn dodged a big bullet last weekend. You know, Harvard is much better this year than last. Maybe between Harvard being a little bit better and Penn not being as strong as last year, the gap between the two was a little bit closer. Another phenomenal overtime game. You know, I think fans of the Ivy League hoops should really be hoping that the two of these teams meet up somewhere along the line in Ivy Madness. Just so that they're both, it's 1-1, and just trying to find it on a neutral court to see who's the better team this year. Mike A. Jones, you know, really helped out. I think she scored 14 points in overtime. Sydney Skinner had 12 points for Harvard. So, you know, Harvard's right there with Penn, and that's really good. The reason I say they escaped a bullet was the Harvard game, but also Ashley Russell, their starting guard for Penn, really hurt her ankle pretty severe in the fourth quarter. She had to be carried. To them this morning, and they said she's good to go. No lingering effects of her injury. So that's what you want to see. You know, you want to see the best players in the best shape. You know, ready to go out on the court. And so I think Penn's in a good spot. Harvard's in a good spot. You know, it's a toss up now. You know, Yale, Cornell, Dartmouth. You can make an argument for all of these teams to do it. Yale, you know, it's shocking. You know, if we think back a few weeks ago. We were talking about Yale actually challenging Penn and Princeton for the top of the league. They had beaten Princeton at Jadwin. They gave Penn a really tough run at the Palestra, and then they lost five out of seven. So they've won two of their last seven, both of them against Columbia. The biggest problem in those games is that their inside game has not been there. It's put a little bit more pressure on Roxy Barriman, who's a tremendous scorer, but not probably the most efficient scorer. And when Emsbo and Gorman and Mound aren't really producing the way they need to, that's put too much on the guards. And I don't know how that's going to work out this weekend. You know, you've got two teams in Penn and Princeton who are battling for first place, and you know the loser may get Harvard. So they're both going to be bringing their A game, and they both have really strong front courts. So I think Yale's in a really tough spot. Cornell, they don't play pretty, but they know, you know, their defense is their calling. They can't shoot three-pointers, but they get every, you know, ounce of skill. You know, they just leave it all on the court, and you never know. So I think they got nothing to lose. That's always dangerous when you're playing against a team like that. In some ways, I think Dartmouth may be in the best spot. They have two games at home coming up. They lost Cy Lippold with, just as you mentioned about losing Devin Kennedy, they haven't, you know, Princeton hasn't missed a beat. They lost their floor general, leading scorer, and they're not the same team, but they've regrouped pretty well. You know, Katie Douglas is one of those typical Ivy unsung heroes who shows up in the second half of conference play, who you haven't talked about all year long, and she's hitting three-pointers, she's keeping them in games. And in the end, I think the three-pointer is going to make the difference here. And I think, you know, with Columbia and Cornell coming to Dartmouth, that's the matchups you want. So I think they're in the best position of the three teams. Columbia, you know, playing hard, you know, they can tie for fourth in the end, but they can't win any of the tiebreakers. But, you know, again, as we've said over the last couple weeks, there's a lot of growth in that program, and they're just going to be moving, you know, forward and up the ladder, and they're going to be really dangerous next year. With Brown, they've lost, 11 in a row now. There's going to be a lot of soul searching with that program when the season ends. They're going to lose 3,000-point scorers. They've got to retool the defense. They tried this year, and it hasn't worked. So next year is going to be a big change, and it's a big rebuild. So that's kind of where I see the area right now.
Yeah, I mean, you made a great point about Yale's front court scoring, first of all. You know, and that was actually what pushed them over the top at Columbia, the win that they needed so desperately Saturday night and got. I agree with you 100% about where Dartmouth is at right now. This seems to be shaking out very favorably for the Big Green, that maybe they could possibly get rewarded for hanging in there throughout the Ivy stretch, and continuing to surge even without Silipold on the court. Certainly her presence is being felt as a team leader even off the court now, but I think that's you get Columbia and Cornell at home, but we can get into this towards the end when we talk about the seeding. Those are pretty challenging matchups. Certainly, neither of the Empire State Ivies are pushovers, certainly this year. But I think Cornell's weekend last weekend is definitely worth noting. This defense under Dana Smith's for real, and to me, Laura Bagwell Katalinich is certainly a first team All Ivy talent. I think the fact that maybe Cornell is not perceived as an upper tier Ivy, doesn't have it's not a flashy style of play, is it? not too many threes, a lot of low scoring games. But there's not a lot that Bagwell Katalinich, for one, doesn't do. And, kind of bullying their way to two wins over Yale to stay in the Ivy tourney hunt here is something. And, they're not just in a spoiler role. They've still got a shot, as previously noted. So, it's good to see a league where, almost everybody is still in it. And there really aren't, other than Brown, I suppose maybe Yale to a certain extent, all the other teams really seem to be surging right now. Maybe Penn is staying steady. But Cornell is seems to be peaking right now. Princeton, certainly. Harvard, Dartmouth, a pretty remarkable weekend, actually, for Dartmouth, particularly I'm thinking about they're nearly pulling off the upset at Penn, despite being very undersized against Penn.
I think what I've been noticing over the last couple of games with Dartmouth, and hopefully they can correct that this weekend, is they've had a bit of lull, especially in the third quarter. They had a really poor showing at the start of the first game against Harvard, but since then they've really started out well in most of their games. But then they just kind of like don't come out of the locker room as aggressive. So I think that's something that they've got to work on. And I guess when you look at Penn, the opposite's going on, is that they've seemed to, the last couple of games, have really struggled in the fourth quarter. So they've got to, certainly work on that. And I think when you look at Cornell against Dartmouth, Cornell's had a tendency to kind of start a little bit slow, get a talking to by the coach in the locker room, and then come out on fire in the second half. So I guess, on that Saturday night game up in Hanover, we'll just kind of see, like, how big a lead can Dartmouth jump out to, it'll be a bit of a chess match to see, how those two teams respond.
And switching over to the men's side, starting off with last Friday night, two more games that fit the Ivy League's Division I leading category of games decided by a possession or in overtime. Columbia, what an outstanding win. Another Ivy Road win for Columbia. And, of course, they would have an even more remarkable one the following night But Columbia now stringing together some Ivy Road wins after not notching any for pretty much two seasons. Huge 80-77 win at Brown. This will be a game. Well, like Penn's the week before, that you'd circle if they don't make the tournament. You know, circle that one. An outstanding standing effort by the Lions to pull off a huge second half in that game. Patrick Tape continued to impress. What more can you say about his defensive presence and presence on the boards at this point? Princeton in overtime, now sweeping Dartmouth this year by a combined 2 points. Dartmouth, like Columbia this year, just hasn't quite gotten the oomph to go over the top in a lot of games, but could easily have been in the top tier. Pretty tough one at lead. What can you say? Ryan Schwieger really stepping up with teams that are keying in now on Richmond and Riraguzo, with Devin Kennedy now out. He's stepping up in a huge way. And then you have Penn, almost, you know, kind of was right there, just didn't have the power to finish at the end, despite a remarkable game from A.J. Broder, clearly still an Ivy Player of the Year candidate. And Yale took care of business Friday night against Cornell. Yeah, Friday night, yeah. But there was another night, and that was Saturday night, and then Yale did not take care of business. Really fell behind early, down 13 at the half. Couldn't quite complete the comeback fully in the second half. And arguably, I mean, would you call that the most stunning upset of the Ivy League slate this year on the men's side?
I mean, given all the factors, how well Yale played on Friday night, it was senior night, they were home. There's so many reasons why that was the biggest shocker by far of this.
Yeah, certainly. Columbia pulling off the road sweep in stunning fashion at Yale, putting Harvard really in the driver's seat to clinch the number one seed in the Ivy League tournament and the Ivy League championship, certainly, at least a share. Pretty remarkable. Pretty remarkable effort by the Lions, who were always right there, but they really got the push over the top lately, and not really led offensively by Gabe Stefanini as much. Interesting and certainly, promising going forward that they can handle different levels of scoring distribution from their top players, and it was an ensemble effort, really, for Columbia at Yale. 44 first half points for the Lions to set the tone in that one. Penn, a surprisingly easy time at Leed Arena, really seizing that game in the second half to start the second half. Four players in double figures. And I think the interesting thing with Penn's defense, and to take a break here, is that this is the defense that we saw last season and that we saw at times in the non-conference this season. Pretty much shutting down Dartmouth, giving Harvard a hard time at Leavitt's, holding them under 60 points. Realized that they didn't have Justin Bassey, who really grilled Penn in the previous matchup, but they were able to hold pretty much the whole of Harvard's offense under wraps. You know, it's not often lately that Bryce Aiken doesn't pop off. But, you know, Penn seemed to contain him as best as you can. You know, and that comes off of shutting down Cornell in the second half last weekend. So, you know, maybe hang your hat on that as a Penn fan going into this pivotal final weekend. The defense seems to be there. Of course, it's been a roller coaster of a season, so who knows? But, you know, defense has certainly been locked in lately. Elsewhere, Brown having an easy time. Not a good weekend for Cornell. Losing both games. Crucial weekend by a combined 47 points away from Newman. And then you have Harvard completing the season sweep of Princeton Saturday night at Leviades, 66-58. Decisive second half, I suppose, for Harvard in that one. Bryce Aiken, again, taking the scoring mantle in that one. Thoughts on the men's weekend, Rob?
Yeah, I guess I'll look at bottom to top, and you know, it looks for Dartmouth, it just looks like they're running out of gas, you know, and a lot of positives from this season. I don't think people expected but I think they didn't have a very deep roster to begin with, and for the last several weeks they've been without Jackson. Then you added Ian Sister has been out. So they're really down. And I think, you know, by the second half of that 10 game, you could just kind of see that Friday night's game against Princeton, you know, they were down 8 with just a minute to go, and they came back on Friday night. I think they gave up so much energy in that game that they just hit a wall. So I feel bad for them for where things have gone the last few weeks. But, you know, they'll bounce back and they'll be healthy, and they only lose Gillian to graduation, so I think things are really looking forward for them. Columbia, you know, what can you say? I mean, you know, thank goodness they're doing great. It's a shame, again, they could tie for fourth when all is said and done on Saturday night, but they can't win any of the tiebreakers, which is probably the biggest thing that's gotten me thinking about expanding the field over the last few days. Is just, you know, arguably they are playing the best ball in the league. They've won 3 of their last 4. They've won, you know, 3 games on the road. Everything's clicking, like you said. You know, they're getting a lot more balance. Stefanini's phenomenal. Tape. Tremendous stuff. You know, they'll get Mike Smith back next year, so they'll get to the free throw line a lot more. So, again, a program that's really, really on the upswing. It's just a shame right now. It was a little too late. Cornell, yeah, talk about teams running out of gas. They really, you know, they were predicted to lose all these games, but I don't know if by as many as they have. They just got blown out Saturday night, Friday night, you know, that bad also. I think for them, they are fortunate, not fortunate that they're getting Harvard on Friday night, but fortunate that the final game is against Dartmouth. And if you're Cornell and you're looking for an opponent, you know, you've got Dartmouth at home. That's probably the best shot you've got of getting a win and keeping your hopes alive for Ivy Magnus. The numbers have dropped each week. I think right now their playoff odds are 10%. So, you know, it's dropped. So they're going to need a little bit of help, but it's doable. But that team is, you know, their defense and offensive numbers have just been dropping the last few weeks. Penn, yeah, you're right. You know, the defense is starting to improve. The offense is a lot of A.J. Broder. He's having a first-team All-Ivy season. You know, every game, you know, you're getting everything from phenomenal talent. Points, rebounds, assists, you name it. It's just tough. Is that where are they getting their three-pointers? And, you know, Michael Wong seems to have hit a wall after in his freshman year. Giving them that much. Bryce Washington missed the 2 games last week. I don't know if he's playing this weekend. So, Jake Silvey. A lot of aggressive defense, gives you a lot of good intangibles, but he doesn't necessarily fill up the box score. Jackson Donahue is getting, you know, he got more playing time on Saturday against Dartmouth, and I'm guessing for senior night against Brown, he'll be getting a lot more play as well. So, again, tenacious, hard working player, but, you know, the numbers, we're going to have a tough time, you know, especially with Brown on Saturday night and Yale Friday, of course. So they've got their work cut out for them. Princeton, you know, it's amazing. Mitch Henderson was talking about the offense is struggling, but the defense is always there. And, you know, Schweiger's come out of nowhere. He's been, you know, a great revelation. Rui Guza for the whole season has been fantastic. And Miles Stevens is, you know, just an amazing talent. So I don't know if they have enough to get ahead of Harvard and Yale, but they certainly are a worthy three team and will not be an easy out in the first round. If they could just kind of improve their offense a little bit, then, you know, they certainly have a fighting chance to, I think they can actually sneak into the top spot, but I think that they'll need a lot of changes up in the offense. Yale, you said it. I mean, that was just a shocker, given everything that was involved in that game and the importance of locking in a number one seed. It's just mind-blowing that, I mean, I guess every team is due for a bad game, but the wrong time of the season for that to happen. I don't think it's going to really cause a problem for them. I mean, I know they have, I guess, what are they now? They've lost two of the last three, but, of course, one of them was to Harvard. Going down the Penn and Princeton is not the easiest road trip after you've had that kind of a shocker, but this is an experienced team and a confident team, and I think they're going to be in the right mind frame to battle back. And I think Harvard's locked in right now. You know, they're finding people off the bench catching. You know, if Bassey's injured, it doesn't matter. Aiken shows up. You know, they've always got another weapon. So I think it's Harvard's to lose right now, and I think, you know, Yale and Princeton will be battling out for 2 and 3 over this week.
And the men's slate, the final one of the regular season, of course, the aforementioned Yale at Penn matchup, pretty huge, and the races for the 1 and 4 seeds, that one at 7 o'clock, ESPN+. On ESPNU, and watch ESPN, is Brown at Princeton at 4 o'clock.
For the geriatric crowd.
that's all for TV. Yeah, that's pretty unusual time there. Harvard at Cornell and Dartmouth at Columbia, both at 7, the latter on SNY. Saturday night brings us Brown at Penn. Could possibly wind up being one of the biggest games of the Mike Martin era. For the Bears, certainly at the Palestra at 6. Saturday night, Yale at Princeton. That game on NBC Sports Philadelphia, interestingly, that game an hour before Harvard and Columbia tip, and Dartmouth at Cornell, the aforementioned. Cornell has had its way with Dartmouth in the last couple of seasons. Switching over to the women's slate, we got Cornell and Harvard on ESPN3 at 6, Penn at Yale, Columbia, Dartmouth, Princeton at Brown. Some interesting matchups there. If you're Brown, you just want to finish strong. You know, a strong showing in one or both of these games, I feel like, would give you a little bit of momentum. But regardless, you're going to have a very retooled roster simply because of the turnover to come with graduations and like you said, there's you know. Be interesting to see how the program evolves and tries to shake off the stretch that it's on. Saturday night, Columbia at Harvard, Cornell at Dartmouth, Princeton at Yale at 5 o'clock, then 6 o'clock on the CW, no less, than a Brown. Let's start on the women's side and try to predict. Oh, go ahead, Rob. Do you have some thoughts on the slate?
Oh, no, it just dawned on me that I skipped over the brown men, and I completely apologize for that. And I just wanted to say, you know, you obviously know that Temin Cho is going to bring, you know, every night tremendous talent. Cambridge is starting to come on. It's not consistent, but he's starting to put up, you know, every other night he seems to be, you know, getting some high numbers. The biggest thing for me, which I think is a big, huge plus for Brown going forward, Brandon Anderson's finally starting to get it together. You know, he's not starting, but he's coming off the bench, and he does what Brandon Anderson does. He gets to the free throw line. He can get up the court in 5 or 6 seconds and get a quick two-pointer. Big asset. But I think the biggest thing was, especially Saturday night, Joshua Howard came back. He had a broken nose. He had surgery. He came back Friday and Saturday. He gave them 16 points against Cornell. Really seemed to be the big impetus to that game. And so I think, you know, he's the big X factor going into this weekend. So I think, you know, if you're Brown, you got to feel really good about that.
Yeah, you certainly do. I do think that Brown is trending in the right direction here because of the players that you mentioned. Yeah, Brandon Anderson, pretty cool to see him, you know, after not playing in a couple of games in the Ivy Slate. You know, started the season with the production levels that we've accustomed to for him. But, he had a huge comeback last weekend, the prior weekend against Harvard and Dartmouth. Critical, you know, it was the KenPom game MVP, actually, in the win over Dartmouth. He's getting... He's back to getting 20 minutes a game, and it was pretty cool to see Joshua Howard back too. When Mike Martin was on the podcast a couple weeks back, at that point he had been out for 4 games, and you know it was we're evaluating him, you know, seeing how he's doing, and he may not play this weekend, and he didn't that weekend, but it's cool to see him back and back in a big way in the win over Cornell Saturday night.
Right, I'm sorry. I was saying Matt DeWolf is out for the season, so it's really important to get him back.
Yes. And again, Obi Okoli continues to do his thing at both ends of the floor. He was the KenPom game MVP in the win over Cornell. Saturday night, pretty well-rounded effort from him. 4 steals in that game. Always nice to see that in the box score. So let's start with the women's side, and given all that we've said and pondered so far, how do you think the Ivy League tournament seeding ultimately shakes out on the women's side?
I think Princeton will be number one. I think that both Princeton and Penn will sweep this weekend. All of this with a grain of salt, obviously, but I think they'll win. They'll be co-champs. And I think Princeton will be the one seed. Penn will be two. Harvard will be three. I'm going to go with Dartmouth for 4. But again, it wouldn't surprise me if any of those. So I think statistically, I guess, you know, if you look at the Yale undergraduate sports analytics group site, I think they have Yale at about a 92% chance of making it in the tournament, with Dartmouth at 3% and Cornell at 5%. So I'm going to buck the trend there. And you know, Dartmouth missed by 1 game last year, 1 game and some tiebreakers. So I'm rooting for them to see. And of course, you know, I feel, you know, familial allegiance for the Cornell Big Red, but I think I just have a funny feeling with Dartmouth this year. So that's how I'm seeing the 4.
Yeah, no, I'm inclined to agree. I mean, just picking the games out, and I'm surprised that the Yale Sports Analytics has that much of a slam dunk for Yale. But yeah, no, I think, you know, Yale has to fill any level of comfort, has to win one of these 2 games. and you're going up against defenses in Princeton and certainly Penn that, you know, are built to limit some of the front court scoring that was so critical critical win against Columbia last weekend. So, yeah, I mean, I think picking the games out, I feel like, Dartmouth is looking poised for a potential sweep, and Yale is perhaps, you know, maybe getting swept. And if that's the case, that would point to Dartmouth. So that's, I mean, I feel like it's so hard to pick between two teams that strong. But yeah, I got the same four.
Ultimately, I think Saturday night, and that Dartmouth has a very small path. All the tiebreak scenarios, I'm with you on that one. But I do think it's going to come down to that game.
Yeah, although, you know, Yale fans can say, hey, we already beat Princeton once. We played Penn tough at the Palestra after a rough first quarter there. So, you know, it's gonna come down to the final weekend. I feel like, you know, Dartmouth's the pick for now.
It'll be interesting if Cornell or Dartmouth make it in, then we can all finally get that experiment of what it's like at Ivy Madness when it's actually a neutral tournament. Neutral site.
No, we haven't seen that yet. So that's an excellent point, actually. We're not going to get it on the men's side. Looking at the games, it's hard to say. I mean, Cornell and Columbia seem to be two teams going in opposite directions now, looking at the current one seed slate, Harvard away from Leviades, but I feel like in a must win situation for Harvard at Levian, it'd be hard to see the Crimson coming up short. You know, I don't know, it's tough. I feel like I'm still going to go with Harvard as the one. Yale, you know, this is where it gets interesting because, as you said, this is it's never an easy road trip. The Killer Peas, as they're called. And I don't know. I mean, you can see Yale getting swept this weekend. And if that's the case, you know, maybe Princeton gets the two. You know, and here's the thing, not that it really matters a whole lot, because they're going to be playing each other anyway, whether it's the two versus the three. You know, if indeed Harvard gets the one, they're going to be playing each other, and it's going to be at Yale anyway. So really, you know, it only matters for Yale from a... And I shouldn't minimize it, because it is a very big deal to win the Ivy League championship, to get a share of the title, the conference title. KenPom gives Yale a 47% chance to win at Penn and a 57% chance to win at Princeton. So actually prefers Yale on the second leg of the back-to-back at Princeton, which is interesting. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess in picking the games out, I feel like Yale at Princeton is really just kind of a toss up to me. I don't know. Maybe I go Yale. I'm kind of back and forth on that one. I do think Penn is in a good place to get the four seed, because even if they lose to Yale, as long as they beat Brown, and this is where we start to get into tiebreakers a little bit, as long as they beat Brown, you know, they're... And, of course, if Brown Brown has to, would have to lose at Princeton in that scenario, but I feel like Penn is in decent shape. You know, it's not that much of a stretch to get Princeton, a Princeton team that's still in the hunt for the Ivy title, to beat Brown on Friday night, avoid getting swept by Brown, and then have Harvard win at Cornell to offset a loss to Yale. So I feel like, and I do like Penn's chances in a win and in scenario against Brown. It was kind of an anomaly from Brown's perspective, as Mike Martin noted on the podcast earlier this season, a couple weeks back, that was the one game up to that point where Brown's offense was clicking, but so was Penn's, and that was the rub there. But like, that'd be a bit of a toss-up, but I kind of like where Penn's defense is at the moment. Feel like they can maybe press an advantage inside. What do you think, Rob? How do you see the men's seeds shaking out here?
Well, so I think for Harvard, it's again, they're on the road, so it's not easy. But I think the other state of Cornell team is pretty down right now, so I think that's a good spot for them. And the game at Columbia is never easy for Tommy Emiger, right? I mean, he's lost many a year at Levian, so it's a game I had actually circled, in the summertime as a key game. So I think they're going to win that one, but I think it's going to be a tough one. It'll come down to the wire. I do think they'll end up in first place. In terms of Yale-Princeton, looking at one of the tiebreaker apps from the Yale analytic group, I think Yale just needs to win against Penn. Not that that's an easy, but I think if Yale wins on Friday, I think they'll win. They'll have the tiebreaker over Princeton. So I think they'll right the ship this week. I think it's, James Jones is a great coach. He keeps the game really simple. Yeah. Rebound, this team defense, and good shot selection. And so I think that they're going to be bouncing back. If not, then I think we've got a lot of questions going into Ivy Madness. But I expect them to lock in the two spot. Princeton, I think they'll split. I think they'll take the three. And like you said, I think it's going to come down to Penn and Brown. I tend to be the more pessimistic Penn fan versus the optimistic, like the ancient Quaker or you. When I look at that game against Brown a couple weeks ago, it was an excellent game for Penn. However, Bryce Washington and Michael Wong went 7-for-9 from three-pointer, from the three-point line. And Bryce may not be playing, and Michael Wong is not what he was back on February 8th. Brown is a team that usually feels confident and comfortable playing at the Palestra. They never seem to shy away. And I do think that Anderson, Coley's always going to be a defensive asset. Shows tremendous on both sides of the ball, as is Okoli. But I do think Anderson and if Joshua Howard has that kind of game again, I think it's going to come down to him, really. There's a part of me that thinks that this is Brown's year. And when I look at where they started and how they've played, I don't want to say that one deserves it more than another, but, that program's had a tough number of years. I think four straight years is the number seven team. And they've done such a great job improving their defense and changing the mentality of that program. And I think they're due. And so it's a toss-up, obviously, but I'm going to go with them as the number four team.
Yeah, I mean, it could go any which way here. Certainly, Brown has, been knocking on the door for a while, and took a huge step forward this year. It's one of those years where, now that there is an Ivy League tournament, you would say, well, they made a lot of great strides as a program this year with a really talented roster, but if now you got the tournament, suddenly finishing fifth you feel a lot more of a thud than you would if there wasn't a tournament or prior to the tournament. you know, you feel it a lot more. And so whoever's fifth or even sixth, I suppose, will feel that. But, you know, shouldn't discount Cornell either. Already, not that we are, but already beat Harvard this year. You know, this will be Matt Morgan's final regular season weekend, final games at Newman. A remarkable career that's, you know, looking to extend itself going forward. It'll be, you know, it'll have to be a bit more of a varied offensive distribution than the last few games have been. Ever since the loss to Yale, scoring's been an issue for the Big Red, and you know, maybe it really is that simple going up against you know, high-powered Harvard offense, obviously, but in Dartmouth, certainly an offense that is very much improved this season in one of the conference's top three, actually, offensive efficiency. The irony with them is the defense has been a bit more of a weakness this year for the Big Green. But, yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, I guess that's what Ivy Madness is all about, is not knowing and seeing how it all plays out.
I will say with Cornell that just a couple quick things. One is if they do beat Harvard, you know, and then they have, you know, if they can sweep and they can 10 can sweep, they would actually hold the tiebreaker because they have that victory over Harvard. That is, if Harvard wins or ties with Yale. I think if those two teams sweep, then Penn would only get in if Yale was the number one team. So there is a definite path for Cornell. It's just that you know, again, going back to the Yale group, I think the analytics group, I think they give Penn a 47% chance of making the Ivy tournament, and Brown is about 43%, with Cornell at about 11%. So there's certainly a better path than the Cornell women and the Dartmouth women, but the hopes are it's going to take a lot for them to get there. My second thing I would just say is I looked at the game notes, and the game is you know, an ESPN game, but Barry Leonard is not doing the announcing, and anytime Barry Leonard is not announcing a Cornell game is an absolute travesty, because he is just a lot of fun to listen to during a broadcast. Russ and Scott at Brown also, I'm really partial to the home team's broadcasters, and I'm always a little bit upset when ESPN replaces them with others.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, Barry Leonard's certainly a broadcasting treasure for Cornell and really all of the Ivy League to enjoy. So that's an excellent point. But we'll be watching and listening, and all the senses will be engaged this weekend. Rob Brown, thank you so much for taking time out to impart. Again, as I always say, great deal of round ball knowledge. We appreciate all the work you do for the site, and we'll see what happens this weekend.
My pleasure. Can I just do like one last little speed round real quick?
Oh, speed round. Okay.
Okay. Well, just a couple things on just on the women's side. I just, you know, we talked about Devin Kennedy at Princeton, which is certainly a tough story. But on the positive side, Sydney Jordan's a senior starting forward. She won the Pine Prize, which is a co-recipient of the Pine Prize, which is the most prestigious award to a Princeton senior. So, you know, congratulations to her. Certainly a deserved honor. Her coach, Courtney Banger, just had her 250th win this past week. That goes on with Tommy Amaker's recent 400th win. James Jones had his 300th win. But to eclipse all of them, Kathy Delaney Smith, in her 37th year at Harvard, is at 599. So if they win one game this weekend, she will hit the magic 600. Which is incredible. She's the all-time winningest Ivy League coach, male or female. She's coached a number 16 team over a number one at Stanford. It's been well documented. People really want to get a sense of how great a coach she is. I would really recommend they go to the Harvard Magazine website. David Tannenwald wrote an article called An Authentic Act about her experiences as a high school coach and in her 37 years at Harvard. and it's followed up by an article called Sisters in Basketball, which is about a panel discussion David had with Coach Delaney Smith and a number of her former players who have gone on to bigger and better things in the world of business and politics and social justice. And if you go on those websites and check those articles out, I think you'll be really, really happy you did.
Yeah, that's a very, very deeply reported and certainly compelling article over at Harvard Magazine by David Tannenwald on Kathy Delaney Smith and her tenure at Harvard, that's for sure. And great point, too, about the Pine Prize. Excellent note. Definitely kudos to Cindy Jordan, for sure. You know, these are student athletes that we're talking about here. And let's never forget that or lose sight of that. That comes first. So, yeah, Rob, thanks so much again. You never quit with the Ivy knowledge, and we appreciate you for it. Thanks so much again, sir.
Thanks for letting me come on, Michael. Appreciate it.